If you look on the Science Network's homepage at this point, you'll see a number of things. One of them is, in fact, some of the speakers who are at the fifth stem cell meeting on the Mesa that we do each year at the Salk Institute. One of the keynotes was by Craig Venter, and introducing him, I made the point that the President's Commission on Bioethics, whatever it's called now, that's chaired by Amy Gutman, had just spent a number of months scurryingly dealing with the issue of synthetic life, and that's clearly in response to the J. Craig Venter Institute publishing results describing the successful construction of what's been described as the first self-replicating synthetic bacterial cell, now known as Synthia. It's not unusual for Craig's activities to provoke responses all over the place. I note also that February, as well as being the anniversary of Darwin's birth, is also 10 years after the genome sequencing. It's a genome sequencing anniversary, so it's very appropriate, it seems to me, that the next speaker be Craig Venter.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be back at ASU again. I was here a few years ago for a nice honorary degree, and I got one, and President Obama didn't. So, but maybe you'll have him back. So my institute's been taking a somewhat different approach than you've heard from the other speakers. I'm an experimental scientist, so I believe in doing actual experiments. And it was actually 15 years ago that we sequenced the first genome of a living self-replicating organism, a small bacteria. 10 years ago we decoded the first draft of the human genome. And we've been reading the genetic code of a lot of different species. And the assumption has always been, is this code coded for everything for life? And so we decided to try and challenge that and try and understand life to see if we could replicate some of these processes. I learned that chemists, after they determine a structure of a compound, prove they had the right one by then synthesizing that compound and showing it had the same properties. So myself and my colleagues, Ham Smith, Clyde Hutchison, and a pretty dedicated team of 25 people working for the last 15 years have been trying to take baby steps on making synthetic life. One of the things that came out of this, we had two sides of this. We had to make DNA, and we had to learn how to make large pieces of DNA, synthesizing now a couple of entire chromosomes. But we also had to learn how to boot up the software. And that's why we ended up using, in fact, DNA as the software of life. And with the whole notion that if you change the software, you change the species. So early on in our process of trying to make DNA, we made DNA for a small virus. And simply putting this synthetic DNA into bacteria E. coli, the E. coli read the synthetic DNA as it would any natural piece of DNA, started making the proteins encoded for by it. And those proteins self-assembled to form a virus. The virus showed its gratitude by killing the cells that made it, but that's how we detect it, these clear spots on a lawn of bacteria. So, using the software analogies, we decided this is a situation where the software actually leads to building its own hardware. But we're trying to go much further. We're trying to make a bacterial genome. And so we had to learn how to boot up this bacterial genome if we made it. And early on, we made a finding that we published in this paper in 2007 that I think is actually one of the most important ones, at least for my understanding of life and our ability to go to these next stages of designing and making it. And it was a relatively simple experiment, so I'll walk you through it. We isolated the DNA from one bacteria. We isolated the entire chromosome We treated it harshly with proteases to kill all the proteins because we had to know, in fact, if we were just making synthetic DNA, that naked DNA would work. We added a couple of cassettes of genes to it, one so we could select for that piece of DNA, and one so it would turn cells bright blue if it was in it. And we worked out, and it took us several years to do this, of how to add that DNA back to a closely related cell. So roughly the same distance as we are from mice between these two mycoplasma species. And so we have a very sophisticated movie that I can show you what we think happened. So we added this new DNA to this cell. And now we have a cell with two sets of genetic instructions. But like that small piece of viral DNA that we made, as soon as we put this new DNA in the cell machinery started decoding it and making proteins. Actually, some of these turned out to be very useful. The restriction enzymes that Ham Smith discovered that sort of led to all our abilities to manipulate DNA were some of the first ones produced in the cell. And the restriction enzymes that got produced actually recognized the original chromosome in the cell as foreign DNA and chewed it up. So now we have the body of one cell and the information system for another. And essentially, immediately, a transformation started to take place where every protein in this cell got replaced based on this new information. And in a short while, we had these bright blue cells. If we sequenced the proteins, there were no hints of any of the original proteins that were in the Capricolum species. They were all by what was coded for by this new piece of software we put in the cell. So change the DNA, change the software, and you change the species. So as the Catholic Church pointed out, as several people have pointed out, we did use a living cell, but the cell that we made with this synthetic DNA is the first one who actually had its parent being a computer. And this piece of DNA has a website in it that has a code for writing several things in English. Several thousand scientists around the world actually broke the code and sent an email to this species with its genome. But we did use a cell to activate this DNA. But if life is just information systems, we're actually now trying to go to the next stage and simply see if we can activate DNA to make viruses and single cells without starting with a cellular system. And I just came from a meeting with NASA and DARPA on the 100-year Starship project, trying to decide how we could maybe send a living species hundreds of years deep into space to try and find these alternate life forms. And one of the notions that we came up with was actually just to send information, sending the digital code of the DNA, and simple systems that when it gets there, it could boot it up and start new life systems. By designing life, by creating new versions of what we have on this planet, and understanding the components for booting up these systems, I think we'll approach at least a basic understanding of life on this planet. Thank you.
So there's lots of things to talk about, but Lawrence apparently thinks that we should now go to an intermission. So we'll come back and discuss a number of these issues. You've all been using the phrase, is there life as we know it? I mean, is there life as we don't know it, even on Earth? There's this marvelous book that's edited by Carol Cleland and Mark Baddow called The Nature of Life. It's got lots of readings in here, and there's even speculation about alternative microbial life on Earth, which Paul, I think, would speak to as well. Sagan's definition in the Encyclopedia Britannica in 1970, Carl Sagan wrote the article on life. And he said, life is a system capable of evolution by natural selection. 1994, Jerry Joyce said, life is a self-sustained chemical system capable of undergoing Darwinian evolution. There's all sorts of other definitions. We've never really got any definitions prized out of you guys. So let's come back and see if we can pin this down a little bit more. Thank you.